Yeah, so we're on Daf Nun Hey Amid Beis, and let's see. We're up to the two dots, which are about, I would say, 15 lines down from the top, and the first word on the line is Hayu. We have that?
Got it.
So the Gemara, of course, quotes the Mishnah. And the Mishnah says, Hayu Sham Gidudios Gvos Asara Tfachim Is Motzien Es Amida Kenegda. So we're trying to figure out what's the outer boundary of the city so that we can calculate 2,000 Amma from that point as the Tchum Shabbos. And the Mishnah speaks about Gidudios. This Mishnah is back on Daf Nun Beis. Rashi there says, Gidudios are Shivrei Choma Shel Charvos Botim. I guess they're broken up walls of ruins. And that's what the Gemara is going to ask. My Gidudios, what exactly are these Gidudios? Omer Rabbi Yehuda, Sholosh Mechitos, She'ein Aleim Tikra. So they're left with three mechitzos. I guess they're open on the fourth side. And usually three mechitzos is enough to establish a bayis, a reshus hayochid. But the tricky thing here is that there's no roof. And I guess no one would really want to live in a ruin that doesn't have a roof to it. And the chiddush of the Mishnah is that despite all that, since it does have three mechitzos, then we could attach it to the city. It means that the city now expands all the way out to these gdudios. And we're going to calculate 22,000 amma from the end of these gdudios. And you'll see it. And even here in Israel, I think you could see such a thing where on the outskirts of the city, there are ruins. I know I saw it in South Africa when we were there. You know, there are a lot of ruins in South Africa. You know, old houses that were long, you know, forgotten, maybe from 100 years ago, I don't know what. And those are considered livable. I don't think anyone's living in them now, but you could live there. Iboilu, the Gemara now has the following suffix. Ishtei mechitzos. What if there are only two mechitzos instead of three? But yesh aleim tikra. You know, we're always trying to see what remnants of the original house are still left such that we can calculate it as the extension of the city. And the Gemara thinks that we can vacillate about the following case. What happens if we add a tikra, but we don't have three mechitzos? We only have two mechitzos, but we have a tikra. So can we equate the following two scenarios? Three mechitzos without a tikra, without a roof, and two mechitzos with a roof. Almost as if the roof takes the place of one of the mechitzos, as if you had three mechitzos. So that's the Gemara suffix. The Gemara doesn't know whether this special din of gdudios that are considered the extension of the city, can that apply in a case we only have two mechitzos, but you do have a tikra. Tashma. So we're going to quote a brisa to be poshet this suffix. Elu Shemis Abrim Imam. The following are considered the Bura Shalir, meaning the outer limits of the city, that we can calculate the Tchum Shabbos Alpayim Amma from them and beyond. Nefesh. Now it's interesting that the word Nefesh refers to a kind of Matseva, not exactly a Matseva, but it was a structure that was placed over the tomb, over the burial. I guess you might call it a tomb. That would be a good name for it, a tomb. And I suspect that the word nefesh is what you call a lashon saginar, meaning what's left to the person after death is the nefesh. So they used to build this kind of a tomb. And what were the dimensions of the tomb? Sheyesh ba arba amos al arba amos. It was quite a large tomb. The four amos square. You'll see it in many Jewish cemeteries, even here in Har Menuchos. But I saw it more in Tzfat, in the city of Tzfat. You know, they have a tomb for this Navi and a tomb for this. And it seems that because this tomb looks like a structure, even though it's not serving as a house for anyone who's alive, but nevertheless, it is still considered like a bais. Now Rashi adds another point over here to explain this Gemara. He says that they used to appoint, apparently, shomrim, people who are like security guards out in the cemetery, and very often these guards would actually sleep in the tombs because they were overnight guards. So even though that's not really a beis dira in the classic sense, because, you know, that's not where he eats and sleeps and lives and brings his family in, but nevertheless, since apparently he will find shelter over there while he's on guard duty, then it's already considered a beis dira because it's Litzarech HaShomer. And once it's called a beis dira, then it's part of the Bura Shel Ir. We can consider it as part of the extension of the city. So we have something called a kever, which is a graveside and a cemetery. And then we have something called a nefesh, which, although nobody would sleep in a cemetery, but it, once you set up this nefesh, it had a double function. It would also function, in addition to being a kind of a tombstone for someone, probably somebody very important who died, but it also served as a dira l'shomer hakvarim. Then we go on to a case of a gesher. Now, gesher translates as a bridge. And I'm not exactly sure what this means in terms of Ibur Shel Ir. I suspect that we're no longer talking about a beis dira. Nobody lives on the bridge. Nobody sleeps on the bridge. But this bridge is located outside the city limits, and it's considered the extension of the city. Because the people from the city, in order to travel and get to wherever they had to go, they would travel over the bridge. Then he has HaKever Sheyesh Bahem Beis Dira. So I think what's happening here, the words Sheyesh Bahem Beis Dira go back to all these three categories: a nefesh, a gesher, and a kever. And again, when we're talking about Beis Dira, we're talking about a shomer. The question is, why does the Braisa feel compelled to delineate both nefesh and kever if both of them are considered Beis Dira? You've already conveyed the message that the nefesh, which is used for by the security guards to protect themselves from the elements, that itself makes it into a beis dira. Why does he mention kever as well? And also keep in mind that in the case of nefesh, the Braisa says it's got to have the dimensions of four amos squared. That requirement does not appear with regard to a kever. And Tosus points out here, Dibra Maskel Nefesh, that your average kever is not four amos square. It may be four amos in one direction, but usually in the other direction, it's only one amos wide. So he says the following: May achar v'zkira abraisa sheyesh behem base dira memelu mevur shetzarch sheyeh behem shir arba amos al arba amos shepachos mizeh eno roy ledira. Now this is a halach that reminds me very much of mezuzah, because the Torah says, with regard to mezuzah, it's got to be beisecha, it's got to be a base dira. And the minimum size for a base dira is 4 amos square. If it's less than 4 amos square, it's a very tight area, and although you could store things there, but it's not a base dira, it's not a place where you live. So this requirement of 4 amos and 4 amos really defines a base dira. Less than those dimensions would not qualify as a base dira, and therefore Tosus insists then in all the cases listed in the Mishnah, whether it's Nefesh, whether it's Gesher and Kever, all these cases are Yesh Ben Arba Meo Amos, Amos al Arba Amos, and the Braisa didn't feel compelled to repeat it at each occasion, because that was always our universal minimum size of a base Dira. So if I understand correctly, there were different types of Shomrim. In the case of a gesher, perhaps you had a shomer who would make sure that there were no terrorists, you know, who would come, no mortars, who would come from another city and cross over the gesher. Perhaps the shomer and the gesher was also in charge of making sure of the stability of the bridge, because bridges, especially in those days, were very, very dangerous. There's all sugi bav basra about taking children for tashbar, you know, to their chadorim. And the law is we don't take them over a bridge because we're too afraid over a bridge. So it could be that that's the security of a shomer, but they set up some sort of a, what we call in Israel a budka. I don't know, it's probably an Arabic word, I don't know. But I remember from my days in the army that there was always a budka. Budka was a place where one of the chayalim was there in a small hut and he was in charge of security. But why the Bryce had to mention both Nefesh and Kever, that's not clear to me. I suspect that there were different kinds of security arrangements for different types of cemeteries. And he says a graveyard. That's what we know. I mean, I don't need anyone to tell me that a Kever refers to a graveyard. Why a tomb has its own shomer and a graveyard is mentioned separately. Maybe the point is that even if the graves are very narrow and there are no tombs in this particular area of the graveyard, nevertheless, there still is this hut which would be a place for the shomer to put himself. Now, what about a Beis HaKnesses? A Beis HaKnesses is not a Beis Dira. In fact, we don't sleep in a Beis HaKnesses, technically. I don't know if you agree with that. Maybe in Clanton Park, they do sleep in the Beis HaKnesses. Yeah, Tak, I remember the few times I spoke in Clanton Park, there were a few people who were asleep. Yeah, I don't know. So in any event, what they used to have is that the shamash of the Beis HaKnesses, otherwise known as the Chazon, he would have his own quarters, his own living quarters. And that would have an impact on the status of the Beis HaKnesses as a whole, since now the Beis HaKnesses has these living quarters for the shamash, that makes it into a Beis Dira, and that becomes the extension of the city. When I was raised as a child, there was a custodian by the name of Jimmy. And he wasn't an official member of the, you know, the Black Lives Movement counts and all that, but he was a great guy. We loved Jimmy very much. And he had his own quarters in the shul. I remember once he invited me in to see his house, so to speak, his little apartment. So that makes the shul into a base dira. Now we have a case of a Beis Avodas Kochavim. You know, talking about a temple for idolatry. But once it has a Beis Dira, Lakomrim for the priests, so that itself extends the city. In other words, we're not talking about Allah. Sometimes the Torah speaks about what's called Kiddusha Sa'ir, the sanctity of the city. Like we had it yesterday in the parasha. We had, discussions about Sanhedrin. It says, Bechol Sharecha, that you should appoint Sanhedrin. So that means to the city. Every city in Israel has to have an appointed court, a judge and a court. But that's an ear with Kedusha, with sanctity. Here, we're not talking about Eretz Yisrael, we're not talking about an ear that's endowed with sanctity. These halachas apply anywhere on the globe. And therefore, it's not a religious element of Kedusha, but rather it's just simply living quarters. It could be living quarters for the priests, and that's enough. Then we have something called Uravos. Uravos are stables, horse stables. Now, you and I would have said that horse stables are not for a Beis Dira. I mean, they're for animals, not for human beings. Until now, we've been discussing human beings, whether they're security men, whether they're priests, whether it's the Chazan Beis HaKnesses. Now we're going on to animals. Even animals have their stables, and those are the extension of the city. You know, here in Israel, there are many cities that outside the city, they have people who are raising dogs. Some of them raise dogs to train them and send them over to different European countries. They sell them. Others are trained for the Israeli police or even the army, police dogs. So those areas which are designated for training dogs, even though there are no human beings living there, they have the status of an ear. It's part of the extension of the ear. And as we said before, we're not talking about Kedusha. We're not talking about sanctity. I don't think in Ir Miklat or Ore Levium we would go as far as the kennels for dogs and includes that in the city. That would be beyond the bounds, the outer bounds of the city. Or, for example, Bate Arichoma or any other Kedushas Ir. Now we have Otsros, Shebesodos. So the farmers kept on their fields storehouses, silos, where they would place, let's say, the wine or the oil after it was harvested and it was crushed. And they kept it in barrels in various storehouses. Those storehouses have the status of the ear. They're part of the extension of the city. However, here, once again, the Braisa found itself compelled to add that same qualification that it mentioned earlier in the Reisha, and that's Yesh Bahem Beis Dira. So if I understand correctly, in all the cases of non-human beings, meaning of animals or vegetation, foodstuff, we're not just talking about storehouses, but we're talking about, and stables, we're talking about a shomer again. We have a security person, and we need to set up a Beis Dira for the shomer, and that's going to extend the city. Then we have something called burgenin. Burgenin are actually these huts, these budkas that we spoke about before, which are set up around the city, and they'll protect the fields. No one should steal the fruits of the fields, and they would protect also the animals that were hunted. You know, they used to have traps, and the trappers would go out of the city, they would set up their traps, and unbeknown to them, an animal was caught in the trap. The trapper was not necessarily there on the spot, afenort. He was back at home in the city. But he would appoint a shomer and hire him a good wage, to make sure that nobody would steal any animals that got trapped in the trap. And they set up burgenin, which means these little huts for these shomrim. Shebetocha, tocha meaning inside the field. Vabayis shebiyam. Now, what's bayis shebiyam? It seems that the fishermen would actually set up on certain boats a base dira. Like today, you could even rent, you know, if you're a rich guy, you own a yacht, you know, and it has, but even if you're not a rich guy, you could buy one of these motorboats for about $100,000 or rent it for probably $1,000 a day or so. And you, when you enter into the boat, you go down to a base dira, an area because if you're going to spend, you know, long spans of time out there in the ocean, you need living quarters. Harelim is Abrim Ima. And these are all part of the Burushal Ir, the extension to the area of the city.
I think Rashi says on the Bayu Shabayam, it is on an island.
Ah. Let's see Rashi. Rashi says, Abayu Shabayam bi'iye hayam bitoch ayin, meaning 70 amo vishirayim la'ir. So it's not that you have a house on an island that's very far from the mainland. It's got to be within 70 amos, 70 plus amos of the city. And we can expand the city for those 70 amos. What I'm not sure about is, right, so 70 amos and 2/3 of an amo. Why we need this? In other words, if it's so close to the city, then lechora it's part of the city itself. What would be the chiddush over here in this case? Let me just see if he says anything in the English translation to enhance. So far, I've been pretty disappointed, but no, he just quotes the Rashi. Okay, so you know what? I think we'll have to wait for the Gemara. The Gemara is actually going to address this case. But let's finish the Braisa. Now the Braisa says, Elu she'ein misabrim ima. These are disqualified to be considered extensions of the city. Nefesh she'nifritza mishtei ruchoseha eilech v'eilech. In other words, now you have a case where this rune was open on two sides, and it's left with only two mechitzos. Again, we're not talking about a case where it has a roof on it. It doesn't have a roof on it. Then we have Geshe v'kever she'ein b'hem beis dira. So nobody is protected there or has any sort of residence. U'beis ha'kneses. I don't know why he leaves out nefesh here. Okay, that's not clear to me. I think the Gemara maybe is going to touch on this. And then we have Beis HaKnes Shembe and Beis Dir Lechazon. Nobody's living. No one has any living quarters in the synagogue. Beis HaVodos Kedin Shembe Beis Dir Lekorah. Ha'urios, Ha'urvos, Va'otsaro Shebesod Shembe and Beis Dir. So we only keep animals and grain in these huts, but nobody lives there, so there's no residence. Bar. Right, bar is the cistern, which is an open digging where the water from the rains fall in. No one lives in the bar. And then we have siachum ha'ora, all different types of shapes of under, you know, subterranean holes in the ground. He says here that a ma'ora is wide on one end and narrow on the other end, so it's not like a cylinder shape. Let's see how what he offers here in the translation. He says, a cistern Okay, that we had, bar. And Siach Mara, he calls a ditch and a cave. Well, I would say cave is similar to Ma'ara because it's narrow on one side. Let's see if he... All right, he doesn't add anything here. Fine. Now, Gader, which means a fence that's made of stone. Shovach is a chicken coop or a coop for doves. Shebesocha, and it's in the house, it's in the field. Vabayis Shebesfina, and the house on top of a boat. Elu Ein Elu Misabrim Ima. Right, these are not what you call residential areas. They're not Roy Ladira. And now we have a contradiction from the Reisha to the Seifa because the case of Bayis Shebesfina we had in the Reisha of Bayis Shebiyam. So what's the difference between a Bayis Shebiyam and a Bayis Shebesfina? So that we're going to have to figure this out. But the basic underlying principle here and everything that we studied in this brisa is that you need a residential area to be considered part of Ibura Shal'ir. K'toni mi'as, it says in the brisa, nefesh, she'nifritza mishtei ruchoseha elech v'elech. Then it's not integrated into the city. My love, the ika tikra. Shouldn't we assume that although there are only two mechitzos, there must be a roof on top of it. And if that be the case, then we need three mechitzos in order to be considered part of the ear. Two mechitzos, even with a tikra, is not sufficient. Sumo rejects it, says, lo, deleka tikra. That the case in the brisa is a case where you have two mechitzos without a tikra, but it's very possible that if these two mechitzos had a tikra, it would be mitzarif to the city, it would be the extension of the city. Now the Gemara doesn't come to any conclusion whatsoever about the status of a ruin that has two mechitzos and a tikra. The Rashba writes that there are those who want to be mekil and rely on two mechitzos with a tikra as the extension of the city because safek drabbana lahakel. And that's exactly how the Rambam paskins, but the Ravid says that we should be machmir. It's interesting, the Rif and the Rush apparently just omit the whole question of the Gemara because they are of the opinion that we don't have any klolim in this case where it remains a suffix. But as we said before, we have the Rashba quoting poskim on the one side lahakel, and the Ravid on the other side lahachmir. So the Gemara now says we saw in the Braisa that if you have a bias that's on the Yam, it's mitztarif. Again, with the condition that it's within 70 and 2/3 of an arm of the city. Ba'yesha b'yam l'may chazi. What use is he going to get from a house out on the sea? So I'm not sure what's bothering the Gemara. I thought it was a case of a traveler who's out there on the sea for long periods of time. Over a papa bebayis she'osui lefanos bo kelim shebesfina. Okay. So kelim shebesfina. Not sure why that's considered. No, he's not living there, but he uses it as storage for his utensils. He says that a building in which the ship's utensils are stored when they are removed from the ship until further use. So I guess the ship is going to dock at some point at a distance that's very close to the city. And at that point, they don't want to leave the utensils inside the ship. They want to make sure that they're locked up. So they bring it into this house that's out on the sea. He adds something here in the note. To extend the city, this boathouse must also contain a dwelling area. Okay, that we said. Everything to be considered the extension of the city has to have a residence to it, a place that's designated for residence. Now the Brisa says that a ma'ara, a cave, is not considered an extension of the city. Uma'ara ein misabrim ima v'atani. Rabbi Chia brought a Brisa in which it says ma'ara misaberes ima. Amar Abaye, kishayesh binyan al piya. That the Brisa, Rabbi Chia, is talking in a case where there's a building on the opening of the cave. Like right near the entranceway into the cave, you have a building, and the cave is considered part of the building. It's like one entity. So that the Ma'ara, even if it's a little bit further out of the city, will still be considered part of the city because it's juxtaposed, contiguous to a binyan al piya. That's really interesting. So the Gemara says, if we're talking about a ma'ara that has a binyan at its opening, so why do you have to tell me that the ma'ara is calculated in the city? V'tepek le mishum binyan gufa. He says, "Lahashlim is shir habinyan kigon the ofen shabinyan einbo arba amos al arba amos." So it's a small structure, and the nimtza she'eno roy ledira. If it's less than 4 amos, it's not royal diva. Ainu misava ba'yidei tzirufo im ama'ora nishlam shi'uro umitztarif im ha'ir. You know, I get the impression that the cave is like an extra room. What word can I use to describe what I have in mind? Like when you want to expand your apartment, like here in Israel, you know, every meter is worth thousands. Very expensive. So we look for an extension, and now we're saying this ma'ara is going to serve as an extension of his house. So even though his house is very small, he breaks through a wall to the ma'ara, to this cave, and apparently he's not violating any of the laws of the municipality, and he's allowed to create that extension. It's like, let's say you have in Har Nof, for example, you know, the apartments are built in the mountain itself. And very often, if you dig either below the ground of the outer porch, or sometimes even below the ground on one of the sides of the apartment, you could actually find open space there. And you could actually expand. You could actually expand. Amar Avuna, Yoshvei Tzrifim. There are people who live in temporary huts or in tents, and these are made of very flimsy substance, very flimsy materials, like for example straw or maybe reeds or maybe myrtle, you know, leaves or other kinds of leaves. Is Ein Modin Lahem. They're not part of the city. And Elam Pesach Batayim. So let's say you had an entire community that's made up of these kinds of houses. where I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll blow your house down. It's made of such weak material. Is ki'ilu eino nidonim ki'ir achas? Even though you have so many of these, you know, they take over most of the city. I guess you'd call it cheap housing. But nevertheless, they're not included in the definition of the city, because it doesn't objectively have the status of a diras keva. Like, for example, if let's say you took your tevel into one of these tsrifim, you would not be chayv in afreshes trumas of maestros. That's a diras aroi. It's not a diras keva. And therefore, we're not going to expand the boundaries of the city. And he writes here, V'ein donin esa'ir kula ke'arba amos limdod hatchum mikzei ha'ir elokol echad monal payim amo mibeso. So this is a whole different take on it, which was not readily apparent when we read the Gemara of Rav Huna. What happens is that a person who lives in a house, he gets a radius of 4 amos outside the house. That we give him gratis. And then beyond those 4 amos, we count 2,000 amos. So in this case, because he's only living in this hut, which is a diras aroi, therefore we're not going to calculate those 4 amos. We're going to, immediately when he steps out of his house, he's already calculating the first amos of the 2,000 amos. Masiv, Rav Chizra raised a question from a b'raisa. The pasuk says in the parish of Machne Bnei Yisrael in Midbar, Bamidbar Lamed Gimel, Vayachanu al Yarden, mi beis hayishimos. I'll read the end of the pasuk. It says, Ad Ovel Hashitim, the Arvos Moav. And we're talking about a case of they camped alongside the Jordan from the base Hayashimos until Ovel Hashitim. Amar Rabba Barbachana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan Ledidi Chazi Liyahu Asra. I actually saw the place where the Bnei Yisrael encamped. Vavi Tlosa Parse Al Tlosa Parse. It was a very large area, and it was 3 parsos on 3 parsos. Visanya, and we have a brisa that says Kshem Nifnin, Ein Nifnin Lo Lifnem Lo Litzidem El Lach Rehem. So first, let's translate the brisa, and then we'll see what we can logically derive from the brisa. And the Brisa says that Rava testifies about this place, which is Mibes HaYishimos, that it was 3 parsa by 3 parsa in area. And a parsa is the equivalent of 4 mil. Each mil is 2,000 amos. So we have an area of 8,000 amos. Pretty impressive. And we have a brisa that teaches us that when they relieve themselves, meaning they went to the bathroom, they would not relieve themselves in an area ahead of them, ahead of the camp, right? They were moving towards the land of Israel, or alongside of them, that's called Litzideyem, Elach Rehem. They would have to go behind the camp lines in order to relieve themselves. Okay, now let's see what we get out of this price, as far as we're concerned. Elu b'nei Yisrael shayudarim b'tchilas ha-machne kasher hutzvu liponos se'yachozim yachreyem sholosh parsos li'orech kol ha-machne ad she'yetzu l'chutz. Wow. What we're saying is that they couldn't relieve themselves within the city, so to speak. They didn't have cities then, but they had camps where b'nei Yisrael were in camp. They would have to leave through the back door of the city. So if somebody lived all the way, he encamped his tent all the way at the front of this encampment, of this machne, he would have to go through the entire machne and behind the machne in order to relieve himself. Now, Bnei Yisrael, Bamidbar Yoshvu B'tzrifim, the Jews were encamped in the desert in very, excuse me, temporary dwellings. And Olim, right, which are very temporary. Now, according to Rav Huna, they should have counted 2,000 Amah from their homes, because if you have a temporary dwelling, you just simply step out of the opening of your tent and you start counting 2,000 Amah. So how could it be that on Shabbos they would be able to walk 3 parsos beyond the extension of the city? So if I understand correctly, tell me if you agree with me, that when it says Liachreem, we're talking about up to an area of 3,000 of, I'm sorry, 3 parsos, which is 8,000 amos. And how could they go that far? He says, B'chol parsi yesh arba milin, mil is alpayim amo. So sholosh parsos, which is 12 milin, is 24,000 amo. So that we're not yet ready for Alpi Hashem Yachnu. Okay, fine. So what does he have here? If he's at the front of the camp, he's going to have to walk over 3 parsos to reach the place where he wants to relieve himself, which is behind the camp. So wait a minute, where are these 3 parsos? I understand they're behind the camp. No, the camp itself was 3 parsos. And now Kshem Nifnim is Lachreim. Someone at the front of the camp would have to walk over 3 parsos. What, 3 parsos through the camp? 3 parsos through the camp. Oh, very good. Now I got it. Let's say you have an oil tent that has 2 openings. Just for argument's sake, it doesn't have to be that way. This is a way of explaining it. So you have an opening that faces Lifneha, meaning in the direction that the camp is going, is traveling. And then you have an opening Lachreya, a back door, so to speak. Now, since we're dealing with temporary dwellings, then according to Rav Huna, the moment you step out of your OL, it doesn't matter from which entrance way into the OL, you're going to have to count 2,000 amma to set up your tchumair. But in this case, if you are the furthest foremost of the campers in your OL, and now you have to go through the back door in order to get lachreim, in order to relieve yourself outside of the camp, then by definition you're going to be walking 3 parsos, which is 8,000 amma. Because we said that this place, which Rava said he actually saw the place, which is Yishimos, that was 3 parsos. Amalei Rava says to Rav Chisda, Digle Midbar Kamet, you're asking a question from the encampment of the Jewish people in the desert. You know, and you can't prove anything from there. Kema Dechsivu, it says there, Al Pi Hashem Yachta, Al Pi Hashem Yiso, Keman Dekvilu Domi. We consider the camp as if it were permanent, not temporary. Even though, again, as soon as the cloud would move, they would have to immediately pack their bags, even in the middle of the night, and move and follow the cloud. But up until the moment that the cloud came, they would stay encamped forever and ever. And that makes it into Diras Keva. And this is very relevant to Meleches Bona and Soser, because those are two Melechos that we derive from the Olim in the Diglei Midbar. Now, the law is that you're only chayav for Meleches Bona when you build a permanent structure. So the Yerushalmi and Klal Gadol ask this question: how can you derive Meleches Otzah from the case of the Olim of Bnei Yisrael in the desert? We know that Meleches Binyan only applies to a Binyan Shel Keva, not to a Binyan Shel Aroi. And yet, paradoxically, the paradigmic case of a Binyan in the Mishkan was a temporary Binyan. It was an Ol Aroi. So the Yerushalmi answers, Al Pi Hashem Yachnu. Which means that when they set up camp, that was a permanent encampment. In order for them to move out, to pack their bags and go on to the next camp, they would need a matir. What was the matir? It would be when Hashem told them, Al Pi Hashem Yiso. And the Al Pi Hashem Yiso in this case was through the medium of the Anani Akova. But that's not important for us. What's important for us is that even if I know that God is going to command me to eventually move on, nevertheless, when I pitch my tent, that's called a binyan keva, because I need a special tzivui, a special matir from Hashem to allow me to move on to the next encampment. So Mimela, we have now not a diras haroi, but a diras keva. And if we have a diras keva, then we consider the entire camp to be one city, and we'll give him another 2,000 amah outside of the parameters of the camp as his Tchum Shabbos. Amarav Chinina, Barav Kana Marav Ashi, Im Yesham Sholosh Chatzero Shel Shnei Batim Hukbu'u. Let's say that we had a city, a township, where they all live in these trifin, you know, these little huts. However, each one of these areas has a chatzer, and there are at least two houses that feed into the chatzer and use, they get joint use of the chatzer. So now we have a case of shalosh chatzeros. We have three courtyards, and in each one we have shnei batim. Now, what are these shnei batim made of? Actually, Rav Chinina doesn't spell that out. But it says hukbu. We now have a kvius of all the batim. Yeah, my suspicion is we're not talking about houses that are made on a temporary basis, because he says hukbu. So hukbu means that the tzrifim are permanent and they define and demark the outer boundaries of the city. And the significance here is that there are three mechitzos, and each one of two batim shenidonim kvuim Nidonim hem ki'ir. Okay, here we have to, there's a lot of information that we don't have over here. We have to try to fill in the missing blanks. Let's just see if we can find a little bit of a shortcut here. He says the following. That if there are at least three courtyards of two houses each, right? So each one of these courtyards has two houses of these little huts, these tzrifin, that pour into the chatzah. What's the word I want to use? That spill into the chatzah is hukbu. Now they're established as a dira kvua. And the nafkamina is that we can count them for tchum, for measuring the tchum of Shabbos. Okay, so what do we have over here? Let's just try to see. If we have three chatzeros, oh, I see what we're saying over here. If I understand correctly, we're setting up an ear, a city of huts. And at what point does the population or the increment of houses of these little huts finally, bingo, they reach the point where we set up the city as a city, each house of which is called a dira kvua. And that's what Rav Kahana is saying. In order to get this this township of that's made up of a community of huts to be considered an ear, then we need shalosh chatzeros shel shnei bat. So if you were to draw like a city plan, and you have two houses leading into a chatzer, and you have another two houses on this side leading into a chatzer, and a third over here, once you reach the number three, bingo, then the three courtyards, which each have two houses that spill into the three courtyards, respectively, that makes this community of huts into a city. Now, it would seem, I'm trying to figure out, what are these huts made out of? I thought they were made out of straw. But let me just read to you the note here. He says, if a community of huts contains this number of proper houses of wood or stone, it qualifies as a... that's a lot different than what I said. You probably didn't want to correct me because you didn't want to embarrass me, I suppose. So I appreciate that. Yeah, when we're talking about this... When we're talking about the structure of a town that's made up primarily of these huts, we have to have a barest minimum of real permanent houses. And that's going to be two, two, and two. So you have six houses. Each group of two houses pours into its own chatzer. So you got three chatzeros. Each chatzer has two batim that partner in that chatzer. And when you have these three chatzers that are made up of permanent houses, then all the other houses in the town become part of the town. You've already established the shame ear. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rav, Yoshvei Tzrifin. Hut dwellers, v'holchei midbarios, desert travelers, chayim einim chayim. Oh, this sounds like an agadic comment. That's not really the way to live. In other words, they're living on a very temporary kind of dwelling. And shepherds inhabit huts. You know, they stay a month or two, they exploit all the pasture grass, then they move on. So it's very temporary. So those who live in these temporary dwellings, their life is not a life. He says, Anshe Mikne, shepherds, Hadarim B'tzrifim, they live in huts. V'darkom Lodurim Nisheyem Nisholseyem B'mokom Echad Chodesh O'Chodshayim. They move in there with their wife for a month or 2 months, and when there's no longer grazing area, they move on to the next place. Holchei midbar yosanoshim aholchem v'midbar yachidim nishoseihem chayem enem chayim lefi she'enem dorim v'bayis shel keva. Viloki machmas aruchos vahamotar. Oh, wow. Now he's talking about the natural elements. And because these huts are so temporary and flimsy, then the winds will constantly blow them and maybe even blow them away. The rains will seep in. And now he says something about immorality. He says, "Uneshem uvneim einim shalahem." In other words, a lot of their children are not really their children, and the women are committing adultery. I mean, it's not clear yet in this Gemara why they're committing adultery. My taima. Now the Gemara asks that question. Ulamar she'ein lehem merchitzos. In other words, their townships are, or where these shepherds set up their huts, are so temporary that the men, in order to take baths, they have to go to a far off place, and they basically leave their wives behind. And if you have to leave your wife behind for too long, I guess that's going to cause trouble. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, he has a different take on this nation. Magishim zela zebet fila. In other words, in these small temporary dwelling towns, there aren't mikvos. You know, they're not there for a long enough time that they could set up a proper mikvah. And therefore, the women have to travel very far to a proper mikvah. And if many women are using the same mikvah, and I guess they're afraid to be alone, so they sort of yell out loud. And as a result of their voices, there are people, men, who hear them, the neighborly men, and they're going to know that these women are going to the mikveh. That's going to be a sort of like a violation of the Issur Yichud. They're going to go in there to be alone with these women. So that's this term. Might be Nayu. Is there any difference between the reason of Ula and the reason of Rabbi Yochanan Kabe Nayu? Nara de Samich Lebeisa. If they have a river that's close to their home, and they could be Tovil in the river, so it's not a place for Rechitza, which I'm not exactly sure why not. I guess maybe the water is not necessarily clear water. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, a woman could be Toveles locally in the river that's right around the area where they encamped, and she doesn't have to go far away in such a way where other people will know about it. According to Ula, on the other hand, we still have a chashash because the men cannot bathe in this river. They have to go to a far off place in order to bathe. Again, I'm assuming that these rivers are not clear water. Let me just see one thing here. Where did I have this here? Second. I'm a little bit confused here. Did I skip something here? One second. Yeah, I think I did skip something. Tanya Nami Hochi, Elozar Ish Birya Omer, Yoshve Tsrifin, Ki Yoshve Kvarim. Al benosem omer oru shochevim kol behema. So Ula says ein le merchitzos. Rabbi Yochanan says magishim zeva zeva tefila might be naik b'nei nara desomich lebeisa. He says the river is suitable for immersion, However, the men would need to journey to a nearby city for a bathhouse. Oh, I see what goes on here. They lived in a society, the sociology was that you had a very sophisticated bathhouse that was heated up with, you know, from underneath the bathhouse with wood, and, you know, they had fireplaces, and then the fire, the heat would go through holes and it would heat up the water in the merchats, and it had a sauna to it. I mean, the archaeologists still are finding these merchatzos from who knows when. So that was the whole culture of merchatzos. And it was hot bathing and sauna. They didn't go just to dip themselves into a river. Is everything okay there? Now, Amar Rav Huna kol ir she'ein bo yerek. Yeah. Ein Talmud Chacham Rashai Lodur Bo. So we need Yerokos, which I translate as vegetables. Now, why does it say Ein Talmud Chacham Rashai Lodur Bo? I mean, if Yerokos are healthy, what does that have to do with the Talmud Chacham? And I think the answer is that these sold for a cheap price, and you can fill up your belly with Yerokos. And a Talmud Chacham wants to sit and learn, he's not going to have a great income, not in those days at least. He says on the bottom, Ein kedai le Talmud Chacham lechol yerek. He says that it's not so good to fill your belly up with yerek, but that's only yerek chai, those are raw vegetables, but once it's cooked, then on the contrary, it fills up your belly. Like if you take a cabbage, for example, you cut up a cabbage and you cook it, it could fill up your stomach. And you don't have to pay all that much for it. So the Gemara says, right, he says on the bottom here that a scholar should subsist on a smaller income. Okay, that's Rashi. So he could devote his time to Torah study. Right, there are three things that cause a person to have a more of a sizable body movement. Kofin es hakoma, and they cause the spine to droop down. Notlim echad michamesh meos mimor ein of shalodim, and they steal 1/500th of his eyesight. Ve'elu hein, you're on afnun vav. Pas kibar shechar chadosh v'yerek. So you're talking about coarse bread, fresh beer. You're talking about vegetables. So we see the vegetables are not healthy. Why does Rav Huna recommend that a Talmud Chacham live in an area where there's a lot of vegetables? Lo kasha. Ha. Besume v'karsi ha b'shar yarke. Rav Huna is referring to certain healthy vegetables, like garlic and leek. But other vegetables are not healthy. Some say apparently just the opposite, that garlic and leek are not healthy and other vegetables are healthy. Kidisanya, we learned in the Braisa, shum yerek. Shum means garlic. Is a yerek is classified as a healthy vegetable. Kreshin chatzi yerek. Leeks are only half as healthy. Niret snow nirasama movis. If you see a radish, I'm sorry, samachayim I meant to say, then a medicine has appeared. So radishes are very healthy. It's the drug of life. So Gemara says, Vasanya niretz no nirasama moves. On the contrary, a radish is poison. Lo kasha kan be olin kan be imahos. If we're referring to the leaves of the radish plant, that's not healthy, but the imahos, which is the roots of the radish plant, those are healthy. Or kan be mosa chama, kan be mosa kshomin. If the radish roots are healthy, it's because it's in the summer months, but in the winter months, they're not healthy. what's the difference between the summer and the winter? He says, in Eretz Yisrael, it rains during the winter. The summer months go without any rain. And consumption of radishes in the summer months help cool the body. And therefore, they are more healthy. Okay, so we're up to Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav. Omar Rav Yehuda, Omar Rav. Kol ir sheyeshba malos umorados. And we've seen this before. You have a city that has ups and downs, hills and valleys, ascents and descents. Is Adamu Behema Shabba Mason Bechatzi Yameh. I guess you have to stress and strain yourself to go up and down, up and down. And as a result, the average life expectancy goes down, both for animals and for human beings. Gemara says, Mason Salkadaita. Does it really mean that they'll die early? After all, maybe this is good exercise for people to go up and down. So the Gemara says, Ela emo mazkinin v'chatzi yameihem. In other words, halfway through their years, they already look older. They age. Because of the strain of climbing up and down these steep paths. And they age prematurely. Omra Avuna Breda Rav Yeshua, Hani Mol Yosa, Debei Birei Udebei Norosh Azkenun. The steep roads between the cities of Bira and Norosh caused people to age prematurely. Now, back in the Braisa on Daf Nun Heim and Beis, we learned that the boundaries of a right town should be squared off. Tanur Rabbanon Bola Rabba. When you come to survey the land of the city and you want to draw a square out of a round city, is Merabin Biribua Olam, which literally translates, he aligns the square with the directions of the world. No saying Tzafono Litzfon Olam, Udroma Lidrom Olam, Visimonach, Egla Betzafon Viakrov Bidorum. So he aligns the square with the directions of the world, and he draws the boundaries facing north, south, east, and west. He places the northern boundary facing the northern side of the world, the southern boundary facing the south of the world. And if you're looking for signs, because you don't know which direction is due north and which is due south, then you look for constellations in the sky, and the constellation of Taurus, which is otherwise known as the calf, it's always north of the celestial equator, and that's called the Egla Betzafon. And the scorpion, the Akov, is in the Dorum. Now, what happens is that Gemini is really further north than Taurus, but it's not easily visible, and the Gemara doesn't use it therefore as a point of reference. The tail of Scorpion is the most southerly of all constellations of the zodiac. And the Gemara now is going to quote a Braisa, actually the Hemshech of the Braisa, Rabbi Yossi Omer im Eino Yodea Lerabba Biribu Shal Olam. If he doesn't know how to align the square with the directions of the earth, then Rabbi Yossi is going to give us the clue as to how to accomplish that. So let's just make a note of where we got up to here on Daf Nun Vav Amud Aleph. Rabbi Yossi Omer, which is approximately I would say one third down from the top of the page. And let's just make sure we have a note for this so we'll know where to pick it up next time. Okay. Rabbi Yossi Omer on the top half, I should say, of Nun Vav Amidah.